If you've been a witness all your life, there's no outside the organization. And once you decide that you want to get out, overnight, everybody just treats you as if you are dead.
What is life like? Inside a community that almost everyone knows, but doesn't know much about. And what is life like when you decide to leave this community? The Jehovah's Witnesses Society dates back to 1870 and counts about 8.5 million members, brothers and sisters, all over the world. I'm trying to find out what drives them and what their lives are like, inside and outside the congregation. My name is Laura van Olfe and this is Inside and Outside, the Jehovah's Witnesses. I'm driving to Almere to meet up with Rion Reiger, a Dutch former Jehovah's Witness. He was born inside the community and lived together with his mother, siblings and aunt. I asked him what life is like inside the community and how often the witnesses come together.
On a normal week, it would be like three times a week, and then one time you would go door to door. And it could be that like you had like Bible studies at house, so that you'd get together with a group in the evening and you would prepare for one of the meetings. That would mostly be on a Monday or Tuesday. And then one time of year you have, and I forgot the name, a really big gathering where they celebrate Easter, but it's like the same principle that Jesus came and he went and he came back. And then you have twice a year you have conventions. So then per region all the witnesses would come together. In my case it would be in Swifterband, and you would be like in a really big hall, and then it would be 3 days, mostly Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and all of them would come together and you would have certain talks from people, and they would tell you which way the witnesses are going and what you should focus on, etc.
Witnesses believe in an almighty God, Jehovah. They believe that Armageddon, which is basically the end of the world, is coming and that only witnesses will survive. They talk about the end of the world during meetings and big gatherings as well. Anyone can attend meetings since everyone is welcome. What are these meetings like for people outside the congregation?
When you go to one of their meetings, they call it, you'll feel very welcome and everybody will be really nice and you'll be like, wow, this is like the best place I've ever been because everybody's so friendly. But that's all to the outward world. One of the things you're taught from a really young age is that when you're a witness, wherever you are, you're always like, you have to be like the poster boy for them, and you always have to act perfectly and behave in a proper manner. But when you're in the inner circle, you'll quickly find out that as soon as you make a mistake or you do something they don't like or they think that isn't correct, they will they will make sure that you're not part of the community anymore, and they'll turn their back on you.
Jehovah's Witnesses don't always turn their back on you. I'm meeting up with Pascal Mertens at a train station in Ghent. He was never a witness himself, but his parents were. They joined the community when he was 14 years old and luckily never turned their back on him. Pascal was never interested in religions, but when his father passed away in 2013, he started studying the Bible to find out more about the witnesses.
So I started studying the Bible and the organization very intensively for 5 years. And after 2-3 years, I started to notice a pattern in the way they teach things, in the way they separate witnesses from their relatives, and after 5 years I finally confronted some of the elders with my thoughts.
An elder is a person that's higher up in the community than a brother or a sister.
And immediately I was kicked out. They didn't want anything to do with me anymore. And I started talking to my mother about the things we found out. After a while, my mother, she also saw what she actually was into. It is a very, very closed environment that only allows their own way of thinking, their own way of believing, and anything that is opposed to that is immediately pushed away.
Witnesses are taught not to make any friends with people outside the community and to break up with family members that aren't witnesses. Pascal didn't agree with that at all. Neither did Belgian former witness Patrick Haak. He's sitting next to Pascal and talks about his parents breaking up the bond with his grandparents.
I was only 7 years old when my parents started the so-called Bible study. In fact, they studied the publications of the Jehovah's Witnesses. And they very, very soon they got completely involved in it. So after a few weeks, they decided to not longer take part at Christmas festivals and New Year's parties. So they broke up with the whole family. I saw my grandparents crying because they were splitting out the family. So Jehovah's Witnesses really break families.
Patrick had a very good relationship with his grandfather and has good memories of the times he spent with him.
I can remember that my grandfather was someone who liked to work in his workplace. He had a machine, a very big machine, to treat metals. And I can remember that all my free time as a six-year-old boy, first year of school, he pulled his big coffin with his materials in it. He put me on that coffin, and he teached me how to love and handle machines and make things and create things. And out of the blue, my mother decided to split me and my grandfather. And I said, "Why? Why can't I go to my grandfather?" And she said, "Well, your grandfather is smoking. He's smoking cigarettes, and we want to avoid to disappoint Jehovah. Just imagine that he is asking you to go to the shop on the corner of the street and buy some cigarettes for him. Would you disappoint Jehovah by doing this?" I said, "No, I don't want to do that." Well, then it's better to avoid that risk and not go any longer to your grandfather. When I'm talking to my niece, who has never been a Jehovah's Witnesses, she said that my grandfather was completely in a nervous breakdown, asking himself, "Why are they taking my grandchildren away from me? What did I do wrong?" He couldn't understand, and 2 years later he died from a heart attack.
How come people want to join a community if that means they have to break ties with their family members? I'm curious to see what life as a witness is like, so I decided to go to one of their meetings. The witnesses weren't comfortable with me recording any audio, so I'm going to explain what I saw, heard, and experienced. I was quite nervous to go to the meeting, but when I came in, a brother saw I was new and instantly introduced himself, and he told me I could sit with him and his wife. We stepped into a big room called the Kingdom Hall, where everyone was talking to each other. A lot of people seemed to have noticed me and came to introduce themselves. The witnesses all looked like they were dressed for a special occasion. The men were wearing suits, and the women were wearing knee-long skirts or dresses. We then sat down and started the meeting by singing a song and reading the Bible together on everyone's individual iPad. A brother named Oliveira was asked on stage to show a video on one of the two TV screens in the room. In the video, you could see a woman rejecting blood transfusion. Blood transfusion isn't allowed by the community. And he talked about how brave she was doing that for God. The witnesses all know the Bible in detail and could perfectly answer questions they got asked by a brother on stage, probably because they need to prepare for the meetings at home. Halfway during the meeting, we got advice on how to do field work, which is basically going from door to door. Adapt the story you're telling to the hobbies of the person you're talking to, so they feel connected to the story and will join the group more quickly. At the end, the witnesses were given homework, which is Bible study, and they sang one last song. After that, multiple people came to talk to me again. At one point, 5 people were standing around me, talking to me. There were people in their 20s, young children with their parents, and elderly people, and they were all, like Rion said earlier, very kind. However, Rion experienced the witnesses in a different way than I as an outsider did. In his family, for example, abuse was very common. He doesn't know whether that was because of his mother's Caribbean background or because the way the community lives, but he remembers it very well.
I remember one time just before we had to go to a Kingdom Hall meeting, me and my little sister got into an argument and my mother thought I had taken it too far. So we were in the car and we stopped at the side of the road and she told me to get out of the car and we stopped next to a bush of like brand nettles, stinging nettles, and she told me to choose one and I was like, oh, why would have to choose one, so I said okay, that one. Then we got home and we got changed for the meeting and I got down and I had to take off my shirt and she rubbed all the stinging nettles all over me and told me to put back on my clothes, and then we had to go to the Kingdom Hall and she says, yeah, if you scratch or tell anybody what happened, I'll kill you. Another time she made me stand with one leg on a bucket, with a bucket of water on my head, and it was like 30 degrees, and she was like, yeah, for every drop of water that falls, I'll beat you with a belt. She's put my hand above a pot of oil that was burning. She's beaten me with a frying pan and it just like, we had to throw it away because it was like all bent over. She slammed my head into a floor and chipped my tooth. She one time pushed me into a cupboard and just started like kicking me. Yeah, she's beaten me, I think, with everything you can, whatever she could get her hands on. When I was younger, I came home like 10 minutes and she closed the door and it was like freezing, and she made me sleep in the shed. It was like -5 or something.
At some point, Rion decided he'd had enough of the abuse. He left the community at the age of 17, which was not an easy choice for him.
It was something like a gradual build-up, and then there was like something I was thinking, I need to go, but it's on the one hand you want to get away from the abuse and the Jehovah's Witness and feeling like you're really forced to live in a bubble that you don't fit into. On the other hand, it's really scary leaving home because it's like, it's home, you know, it's all you've ever known.
Patrick left for a different reason. His family had a dog plague in the garden and the way he treated the plague attracted media attention. Because he was an elder, he was not disfellowshipped. Being disfellowshipped means being expelled from the community by the community. When Patrick heard the negative reactions of fellow witnesses to him not being disfellowshipped, he started asking himself, if I get all this negative attention, what would it be like if a regular brother or sister did what I did? He slowly started questioning the organization more and more, and eventually left with his family. His family-in-law still lives in a congregation, which is quite difficult sometimes.
What was the hardest thing to leave behind?
The family contact is one of the hardest things, but even the friendships you had, because everything is broken. You were indoctrinated for so long time, decades. You were repeatedly remembered of how bad association could spoil good habits. So we had no friends outside the organization of Jehovah's Witnesses. So once you're out, you are shunned. Every contact is destroyed immediately. They are not answering phone calls. They are not answering messages. They are not answering emails. You cannot visit them anymore. They close the door. They don't even open the door if they see that it is you. So this was a death sentence, and it felt really like you received a death sentence going outside Jehovah's Witnesses and having nobody to go back to.
Patrick and Rion both left the community. But what is it like when you don't leave voluntarily, but you're disfellowshipped? I'm talking to Irish former witness Jason Wint on the phone. He was disfellowshipped for sex before marriage.
When you're disfellowshipped, the impact is basically from an internal perspective or from a very close family relationship. So if you were living at home, you could continue to live at home and everything continues as normal. But as soon as you move out of the house, then any of those that are Jehovah's Witnesses are no longer allowed to talk to you. Now, you can go to the meetings and to the services and you're allowed to sit there, and usually they'll have you sit at the back away from anyone and they won't acknowledge you. They won't say hello to you. They'll ignore you, and you can sit there and they sometimes have a question and answer. You're not allowed to participate in any of their activities. You can just observe, and then you usually come late and leave early, you know, so that you don't offend anyone. For the first couple of months, maybe I would have had friends outside of the Jehovah's Witness community, mainly because my dad wasn't a Jehovah's Witness. So all the neighbors in the estate or in the housing estate that I lived in, I was friends with them, you know. So when I got this fellowship, I still had those as friends. But then you're completely and utterly shunned by everyone else. They just stop talking to you and they're not allowed to talk to you. You might now and again get someone on the street that passes you by and they'll kind of give you a look of how you're doing, or they might give you a look as in you're a disgusting person until you come back into our group type of thing.
The silent treatment is a really big punishment for former Jehovah's Witnesses. The witnesses they used to be so close to completely ignore them.
It's very demoralizing when you have your very close friends not talking to you at all and ignoring you. But even what I found as well, even while I was a Jehovah's Witnesses and being in good standing as a Jehovah's Witness, there is a kind of a level of shunning committed by Jehovah's Witnesses on a regular basis, meaning that they'd use the silent treatment a lot on people that they fell out with. And I think that all comes from the whole disfellowshipping process, that the silent treatment is the way to deal with problems. I eventually left the community after 2001 and then kind of made my own friends. And then I found out actually this silent treatment is actually cruel.
Pascal's mother also experienced that silent treatment after she left.
My mom, she has friends that are living like 300 meters away from where we live. She knows them for 35 years. They've been very close friends for most of their life. And now if they see her in the supermarket, they just turn around and they don't speak to her anymore. And she didn't do anything wrong, nothing happened, but they just treat you as if you are dead.
Why do people voluntarily leave the community if leaving has such consequences? I asked Rion.
I didn't want to be locked up in the cult anymore. So when stuff would happen and I thought, well, this is because I made the decision to leave, I was at a point, well, I'd rather die than have to go back. So I think that mentality is I think that's the biggest reason that I never chose to go back. And I think I also didn't want to face the scrutiny or beg or be on my knees because I left. There's a quote I saw once. I forgot what it's called. It's better to live on your feet and die on your knees, something like that. And I was like, well, I'd rather live my life the way it is. And I always had hope that things would get better and I would be happy and I could leave it all behind me than go back to their cult and have to be brainwashed again and live the way they want.
Would you say that you leaving together with a part of your family has helped you?
Yeah, of course. Of course. We could sustain each other. We've seen how we were sustained for our children, and afterwards how our children were sustaining us. So it was it brought us closer to each other. Yeah.
Patrick and his family, Jason and Rion, have all gone through a depression after leaving, though they're very happy they left. How different is life for them and for Pascal's mother now they've left the community?
When you're a witness, your life is really structured. It's really community orientated. You always have a feeling, well, everybody cares for each other. Nothing wrong can happen. So you're like in a happy bubble. And then you get into the real world and you find out they're good people, they're bad people. You have to be more egoistic because if you're not, people take advantage of you. So you learn how life really is.
And then you have to start building new relationships with your real family. I mean, it's for the first time in all this time that my mom and her brother and sister are really having a close relationship, because she was taught, well, my brother and sister, they are part of the world and they're servants of the devil. So there was never been a really close bond. And you have to restore that after 34 years. You can imagine how difficult that is. Yeah.
I can imagine that you do sometimes miss the contact with your family that is still inside of the community. But do you miss the community itself now you've left?
Not at all. Not at all. It was hard because you have no other friendship outside the organization when you leave. But little by little, you are building up friendships. And now we are celebrating Christmas with friends who are really friends and not friends because of a conditional reason, because you comply to this and to that and to that and to that rule from Jehovah's Witnesses. No, we are just friends because we resonate on each other's frequency.
And what is the biggest difference between your life as being a witness and your life right now?
Well, I live now.